Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tolkien Road. John here. Greta.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Super duper.
Yeesh.
All right.
So, yeah, here we are, episode 223.
223.
On this episode, we're going to take a look at some of the feedback we've received from our Lord of the Rings and religion episodes.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been promising this for a while.
We have. We have. And
we finally delivered.
Not yet.
Well, we're about to.
We're trying to. The feedback has kept coming in, so.
Really?
Well, yeah, you know.
Wow.
I mean, people get a chance to listen and collect their thoughts. And
yeah.
So it's continued to, and it likely will continue to come in even after this episode, and there'll probably be feedback to this episode, so we'll have to do a Lord of the Rings and religion feedback episode.
Feedback. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you expect this kind of response when we originally did the episode?
I mean, we always get feedback.
I know we always get feedback, but I mean...
It's controversial.
Okay, I guess that's interesting. I knew it was controversial, but I feel like we've done other controversial things that we haven't gotten quite this kind of response from. Or two, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just wondering if you were surprised at all by the volume of correspondence for this one particular episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know... it's a little bit more than maybe we usually get, but
yeah.
But it's good stuff and it's thoughtful and it's a topic that is very ripe for discussion, and you know, people probably have lots of people probably have strong opinions one way or the other on it. So
it's true. It's true.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what we're talking about this episode.
I'm excited.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a shout out to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien and Lise Yu, as well as our newest executive producer, Andrew T., a returning and boosting patron.
Awesome. So, thanks, guys.
Thank you all so much.
Yes.
And thank you, Andrew, for your generous donation to the Tolkien Road.
Yes, thank you.
At the executive producer level. So... actually, what's the at the Gandalf level? I think I have that called on Patreon. So
gotcha.
And special shout out to our to another new patron, Kevin C. Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks like early access to new episodes and more. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out the deets.
Deets.
Yeah.
You always say deets. I think that's funny.
And by the way. Well, it saved me a syllable.
It does.
Yeah.
You're right.
Which I probably just, you know, made up for in explaining that to you.
More than made up for.
For several episodes.
True.
But you try to save time where you can, right?
You know what? It all adds up.
Time isn't on your side. It just isn't.
No. Despite
what the Rolling Stones might have thought.
It keeps on going.
So speaking of Patreon, we are doing... we're doing the video of this episode, and our intent is to provide this video for our patrons, so their early access will be not only the audio but also a video of this, so you can, and that video will only be available to patrons, right? So for the foreseeable future. So so that this isn't something that's going to become that's going to become available to everyone the day that the podcast is released. We're just doing video for our patrons. And we're going to see how this goes. We're going to see how, the patrons respond, if they like having the video. And, you know, if you guys want to see the video, if y'all want to see us talking, you know, as we, instead of just hearing our voices, but actually see the human beings behind the voices.
Weird facial expressions that we make without even realizing that we're making them.
Yeah. Our awkward appearance on video because we're not used to, you know, we're not used to doing the whole episode
right
live and in person for you to see. So
I just noticed you put up your Christmas gift.
Oh yeah. From
our daughter.
Yeah. From our daughter
over there.
Well, don't tell people what it is. So they have to go check it out.
I'm not going to.
So and see if they can figure it out. So there you go. If, you know, let us know if you figure out what the new Christmas gift is. So even though you haven't really, I guess you've seen, maybe some of you have seen some of this stuff before because it's in the background of some of the other videos I've done, but see if you notice the new thing.
It's like a Where's Waldo kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of. Where's Frodo?
Where's Frodo.
But it's not Frodo. It's not. I'm not like hiding Frodo from you.
That's your hint.
It kind of is.
Not Frodo.
It's indirectly a hint.
Oh, it is indirectly a hint. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so go check out our video. Say, if you're not already a patron, all you got to do is sign up to be a patron. You can watch the video. So, and we'll see how this goes. It's a little bit of an experiment, maybe for the next couple episodes, trying some new things as we enter the new year. So, but we're not quite there yet.
No, almost.
Oh, I also want to give a shout out to Richard W., who gave a very generous tip via Tip Jar. So you can go to our website and select leave a tip for a particular episode and, you know, just look for that blue button that says leave a tip. And you don't have to necessarily become a patron, but you can just leave us a tip and say, hey, thanks for what you do. And we really appreciate all who have done that, and Richard W. for doing that recently.
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Lastly, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us, because that helps get the word out, especially when you leave that 5 stars and you say you leave a comment, right?
Right.
Say some
comment.
Say some nice things.
Yeah.
Leave it's a key. They call it a review, I suppose. Okay. Yeah. So nothing much new in the world of Tolkien news that I'm aware of. I did want to say that we've been watching. I declared to our kids that we're going to watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy over this Christmas break. So that's what we've been doing. We finished the Two Towers last night. Mm-hmm. We've been watching the extended editions too.
Yes.
So
yeah. And it's, you know, I think this is the perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
Because it is an investment of time.
Oh yeah.
Like for real. I mean, a worthwhile one.
It's funny their reactions.
Still an investment.
It's funny their reaction. I think our oldest, or daughter, you know, she wants to watch it and she's been enjoying it, but she's also like kind of like, you know, I don't think she's just like wanting to just like be a marathon, you mm-hmm. know, like everybody else. Although I'm really hoping, because none of them have read Lord of the Rings, so none of them know how it finishes. I don't think they do. And so I'm really hoping, like, once they get a taste of, you know, so we watch like Helm's, you know, the movie Two Towers ends with Helm's Deep, right? Which is a very exciting, like, action packed scene. But then I'm really hoping that once they get a taste of like Return of the King and just some of the incredible moments, like the ride of the Rohirrim and those sorts of things, that they're going to be hooked.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Our middle child boy he's pretty into it. He's wanted to watch it.
He's kind of a movie buff. Like he enjoys watching movies.
Yeah,
It's hard to find a movie he doesn't enjoy.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think he is really enjoying it.
And then the youngest is the funniest, because he's such a he likes sports and video games, and so we've kind of had to force him to watch it. You know, initially when we started Fellowship, he was like, can I just go like work on my story? He tried to like, you know, instead of saying like go watch sports or video games, play video games, he was like, can I just go like work on my story or something? Like, no, this is family time. We're going to watch the movie. And so I think he's been starting to get into it, but it was kind of funny because he left towards the end of the first half. I think it was the first half of Fellowship.
Yeah, it was first half of Fellowship. Yeah.
And you know, where they end with the Council of Elrond, and he comes back and I told him, man, you really missed out. You know, you missed out where they play baseball at the end. And I did not expect him to take me seriously. And he had this
face.
Look on his face.
Oh,
just
my gosh.
Like,
he's like,
what?
What? He's like, why didn't you tell me? He was like on the verge of tears.
I felt a little bad, but it was still really funny.
It
like,
was so funny.
He quickly realized we were messing with him. But yeah, he totally thought that there was going to be like all of the people at the Council of Elrond were going to have like a pickup baseball game to end the movie.
Which is like a super funny mental image. Like, I mean, not that the elves aren't, you know, athletic looking, but yeah, baseball in Middle Earth is just kind of a little bit of a ludicrous idea.
I mean, I bet Gimli could hit some dingers.
Yeah.
You know, those dwarves.
For sure.
Those dwarves are built like, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of classic home run hitters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those
Absolutely.
Classic sluggers. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been a good time. Anyway, so that's not really news, but just a little tidbit I thought you guys might enjoy.
Yeah.
All right, well, so we got a lot of correspondence to get to. I had a Tolkien quote of the week for us, somewhat, I think, related. And this one is from On Fairy Stories. Tolkien says, "Fantasy is a natural human activity. It certainly does not destroy or even insult reason. And it does not either blunt the appetite for nor obscure the perception of scientific verity. On the contrary, the keener and the clearer is the reason, the better fantasy it will make. So I love that, because Tolkien, you know, again, one of the things we love about Tolkien is the verisimilitude of the universe he created, right? The legendarium of the universe, you know, mm-hmm. the verisimilitude of the legendarium, right?
Yeah.
That he took so much time to make, you know, and kind of fretted over all the details in this to make it feel like a real place, right? Not just something that, like, adults, like, you could read as a kid and be like, oh, this is fun. Then as an adult, you're like, oh, that's not real. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I still, to this day, like, I step back frequently when I'm thinking about something with Tolkien or, like, the history of, like, you know, I've been rereading The Hunt for the Ring from Unfinished Tales lately, and it's just so detailed. And I have to take a step back for a moment and be like, this is kind of crazy. I'm sitting here, like, obsessing over the history of this, like, minute detail from this thing that didn't actually happen. But I'm like paying really close attention to the details of everything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not the only one. So many people do. So
it's true.
I love that, you know, I love the connection Tolkien makes and how he's contrarian towards kind of the modern conceit of fantasy being opposed to reason. And I say this is tangential to the topic of our episode because one of the things that for me and for many Christians we take issue with is the conceit that, which we feel like is a modern conceit, that religion and science automatically contradict one another, right? That they mm-hmm. that they automatically go against one another.
Yes. Yep.
Which I'm not going to get into this on go real deep into that right now, but I'll just say, like, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer for rational reasons. Right.
Right. Yes.
Like,
yeah.
for things that
and
I would defend rationally
as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
that goes
history,
hand in hand.
History
yeah.
kind of is a subset
yeah.
of
reality.
Reason, right.
And yes. Yeah.
But I'm a Christian for those reasons. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I like hearing Tolkien talk about this and saying, like, I feel like there is a, like, rationalism is a sort of, heresy of modernism. Right. It's kind of a subset heresy of modernism. There I go again, getting controversial, probably going to get some, you know,
unbelievable.
Angry emails about that. But anyway, do with that what you will.
That is a great quote. I really, really like that.
Right on, Tolkien.
Yeah. Go Tolkien.
All right. Well, we're going to start off the main meat of this episode by reading our response from Ettinger, who, you know, it was our response to his comment that he left that kind of set this whole thing in motion with doing the Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. and religion episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just going to read. I invited him to, you know, we corresponded some after that episode, and I invited him, you know, to say what he want to say for this audience. So this is the response from Ettinger. Ettinger XRO101 is he called himself on the iTunes review.
Oh.
So here's what he had to say. He said, "I'd like to start by thanking John and Greta for the show. I enjoy it very much, and I am appreciative of the graciousness to allow me words on the podcast in regards to the iTunes review. I left a few weeks ago. I'd like to start by saying I have nothing against religion nor those who practice it, and that it is my firm belief that one should be able to do and believe what they wish with no restriction, so long as it doesn't bring harm to others. That being said, the review I left was highly critical, uneducated, and poorly thought out. I guess on the day I wrote the review, I was in some kind of mood and had heard enough comparison between Tolkien's work and religion. Whether from grumpiness, hunger, or whatever other else excuse I can afford myself, I hopped on the internet to deliver a distasteful review of a show I very much enjoy. I guess it came from loving very much to escape real life and real life problems through Tolkien's works, and the frequent religious inserts just kind of put me off as it kept comparing my fictional escape to a real life subject I feel irrelevant. I fancy myself well educated in most things Tolkien, but overlooked or chose to ignore all the correlation and relevance of the Christian religion. Now, being better educated and enlightened on the matter, I have come to the conclusion that I still don't like religious comparisons inserted into my Tolkienology, but respect, understand, and appreciate that some people do. Also, seeing as how John and Greta have Christian beliefs and are the creators of the show, it isn't up to me nor anyone else what content they put into their show. Regardless, I love the show and have learned very much useful and entertaining information. If I could, I'd retract my 3-star rating and give 6 stars.
Oh, wow.
Sincerely, Ettinger." So
that's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Your kind of follow-up to all of this has been incredibly gracious. And you know, and I think I expressed this to you in some of our personal correspondence, but it, you know, it sometimes as a Christian, I lose sight of what my perspective on, you know, disagreements and controversy should be as well. And I, after I got your initial response and kind of, you know, really apology, I was just kind of like, can I kind of drop the ball and be a little too, was I too brusque on the initial episode? I don't know. You know, I don't really go back and listen to our old episodes. Once they're done, I kind of let them mm-hmm. go and let them be what they are. Mm-hmm. But I just have to say that I really, you provided a like model of what a Christian response should be, regardless.
Even if
when it's clear you don't consider yourself a Christian at all. Mm-hmm. You provided a very like good example, I think, for mm-hmm. you know, for many, and just saying like. Mm-hmm. You know, just basically saying like, I didn't realize, and I think maybe I was just in a bad mood, so I'm sorry, you know, that I left a yeah. review for something I really enjoy. So I just got to say, I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I commend him very much for his response. And I'll be honest, I can relate to, you know, what he said about I think a lot of us view books, especially those like Lord of the Rings, as a type of escape. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that how Tolkien felt about escapism and all that, but all that aside, I understand that. Sometimes you just want to forget mm-hmm. about like real life and controversial topics and all the things, and you just like, can I please just have this one thing?
Oh yeah.
That is free of all the stuff of the world, you know, of my real life. Like, can I just have this one thing?
Absolutely.
So I understand, like, I totally understand where he's coming from in that respect, but I also very much appreciate his honesty and humility and all of it, you know.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, like Tolkien himself talks about escape, right? You know, that in On Fairy Stories, and that escape is a chief function of fantasy and of his fantastical works, mm-hmm. that we want to be able to escape from the aspects of this life that feel like they imprison us,
right?
Now, you know, for Tolkien, for us, for many Tolkien fans, religion is not actually something that feels like an imprisonment. It can. Religion, I will absolutely say that religion, can be perverted into something that feels like a prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have experienced that in my own life, right?
As have I, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, I can definitely agree with him on the, especially, like, I love the fact that Tolkien refuses to let people say, you know, come out and say like, well, you know, your story is an allegory for this political movement or, you know, this or that. And he's just like, stop trying to say my story is about something other than what it's just about. Mm-hmm. Right. Like mm-hmm. that it's about your pet little thing that you noticed. Right.
Right.
It may be applicable to that. There may mm-hmm. be things that are applicable to that, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that it's about that. And so if we do err sometimes into, you know, playing up too much the you know, if we get a little heavy-handed on the religious significance and the Christianity aspect, I think that's gonna happen, just depending on whoever is talking about some, you know, about Tolkien's works based on their own biases and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I can see, you know, we just did an episode on Lord of the Rings and paganism, and I can see somebody, you know, a pagan being like, but still, like, Tolkien means, you know, like, brings out these aspects of what paganism means to me, and that's why I really enjoy it. And it's like, okay, that's cool. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I think that's what's so amazing about Tolkien is he has the ability to, like, unite people from a lot of different walks of life and maybe who would even disagree strongly in different areas. But he's something we can all kind of come together and mm-hmm. put all those things aside for a moment. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not to say that, like, talk about the things that really matter, but like talk about them in a way that's more constructive, right?
Yes.
And talk about
yes.
them in a way that's like, that even we're not putting aside our disagreements necessarily, or like saying that they don't matter. We're just saying like, this is something we can actually agree. Like we love, and we love what he's saying. And mm-hmm. there's something here that we think gets to something that's possible that can possibly unite us. Right.
Absolutely.
And for me, that's one of the reasons I do this podcast.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Same. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that.
Ettinger, thank you so much for, mm-hmm. You know, for writing this note,
yes,
and for just taking the time to, you know, put these words out there. Mm-hmm. I'm really kind of glad of the you know, the happy fault of maybe we call your initial review A, just giving us a reason to talk about this topic directly, but B, getting a chance to correspond some with you. So
yeah,
appreciate that.
Yeah, very much. Thank you.
You know, before we dive into the rest of the correspondence, I just wanted to say I've realized recently just how true Tolkien's quip about Lord of the Rings being fundamentally religious really is. The obvious sense is the influence of his own religion upon the work, of course, and we've talked a lot about that. However, there's an even deeper sense of truth to this. Lord of the Rings is fundamentally religious because it plumbs all of the same questions that religion typically does. The nature of reality, the nature of life, the nature of death, questions of afterlife, resurrection, reincarnation, even the end of all things. Where does evil come from and how do we overcome it without succumbing to it? Are there supernatural beings and what are they like? I could go on and on, but I wonder if we might even call Tolkien's lifelong passion project a work of speculative theology. Mm-hmm. In all of these things, he's working out so many of the questions that truly matter to us as human beings. And he does it in a way that totally engages the imagination and the intellect. And as I was just saying, it also allows people from all walks of life and backgrounds to come together and kind of have their minds come together in a way that is productive and constructive, I think. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, having like rewatching the movies, mm-hmm. I know we've only rewatched the first two, but, it's been a while since we've watched them. But after, you know, doing so many episodes and talking about so many different things and then rewatching the movies, I think that even hits home even more for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. I mean, because the whole, the lore and the, you know, everything that's gone in to Tolkien creating Middle Earth, it's just so vast, and it deals so wholly with reality and all those questions that face continue to confront us as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the scene that's sticking in my mind that's kind of maybe most like applicable to what you just read was like the scene with Gandalf, mm-hmm. coming back as Gandalf the White.
Right.
Just the way it's done in the movie. Like, you know, you get the sense in the book that, oh, okay, he's back, he's resurrected, whatever. But the way it's done in the movie, like, it just hits you like, whoa, this is like, you know, especially, you know, it's just so reminiscent of the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
The way even Gandalf himself describes it, you're like, wow. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, anyway, I'm rambling, but I think you're absolutely right. I think you hit the nail on the head, just because it is such a deep exploration of all the things that we as humans deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just impossible to separate it from mm-hmm. religion.
Yeah, well, and you, just going back to, like, you know, when we talk about religion and you know, I'll just say when we talk about Christianity, you know, so much in the modern world, we're talking about something with 2,000 years of history, and
mm-hmm.
And for everyone has their own experience. Like, most people have their own experience, especially probably people who listen to this audience. You know, I would guess have grown up in societies that at least were once Christian, still have very strong, like, kind of Christian connotations. Maybe the majority population is at least nominally Christian. And so there's a lot of people who maybe have, there's just a lot of baggage that comes along with, you know, with Christianity these days and whatever mm-hmm. flavor you're going to, you know, that you might end up looking at it or talking about it. And I think one of the things that I appreciate about Lord of the Rings is it gets back to, you know, what I think really, Christianity was when it first arrived, right? Like, not in this, like, in sort of a analogical way. I think that's the right term, right? You know, you imagine, like, just imagine, like, wipe your brain clean if you can and think, like, I don't know anything about Christianity or the history of it, right? And put yourself in the shoes of some, you know, poor person in the Roman Empire, you know, 1900 years ago.
Hmm.
And somebody comes along and, you know, and they say, have you heard of Jesus of Nazareth, right?
Yeah.
The one who rose from the dead, right? The one mm-hmm. who was crucified, the crucified one who rose from the dead, right? Mm-hmm. And and they say, you're like, what? Rose from the dead, what? And then all of a sudden, you know, they start telling you, like, I've met the people who knew him, and they testified to this, and some of them have given their lives already. Some of them have been put to death already for, you know, for testifying to this. It, we talk about this. Today's the Feast of St. Stephen as we record this, right? Which is the first Christian martyr.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, you kind of put yourself in those shoes subtracting all of that baggage. And you remember, like, what was the appeal of this thing? What caused it to spread so much in the first place? Because for the first several hundred years of its existence, it was not legal, right? Mm-hmm. It would get you killed, right?
Hence the catacombs.
And, you know, so you go back to those days and you're like, what was this thing that caused this, that caused it to spread?
Right.
You know, and it was hope,
It was hope.
And I think that's what Tolkien gets at in Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. is it's this hope beyond the walls of the world, right? Anyway.
And that's something that's a major theme of the novels,
mm-hmm.
you know, too. I mean, why would Sam and Frodo go through all that if they didn't have hope?
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah, there's got to be something worth fighting for.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's jump into some of this correspondence, shall we?
Yes.
All right. So the first one is from Hope, back from November 23rd. I think this was initially after, and she actually speaks some to some of the occult issues, which is something we really haven't touched on too much with this topic.
Okay.
But I hope to at some point. And I think, you know, when we talk about the occult, what, you know, we've talked about religion and Tolkien's own religion and the way it influenced the works. We talked about paganism and, you know, the charge that Lord of the Rings promotes paganism. We haven't done one that talks about, like, you know, issues of the occult and, like, you know, magic and these sorts of things. A lot of the arguments, the anti-Harry Potter arguments you might hear because of all the magic, right? You know, those are somewhat applicable to people talking about Lord of the Rings, because, you know, magic does exist in the universe of Lord of the Rings,
right.
But it's an interesting topic. So anyway, that's just a little background to say, what do we mean by a cult? And I'm going to read Hope's message now. It seemed, in regards to the Lewis Tolkien occult theory, it seems that two of the secret occult arguments are that he recorded his stories and he had regressed memories of Atlantis. The latter I have no knowledge about. I have never heard of these Atlantis memories. I can say, however, that Tolkien was a great imaginer, and saying he believed in the occult because he recorded his stories is like saying he went to a party dressed as a bear because he believed he was a bear. Furthermore, it is well known that he was a great historian, and most religions of the past were occultist in fashion. So if he were to be duplicating such mythology, then he would have to include the occult as a large part of the story. Lastly, it seems when we speak of these great religious figures of the past, we often forget that they were not, nor could they be, a perfect representation of the Christian God. It is entirely possible that there were parts of the occult that Tolkien did find interesting. And if you were a God-fearing person, you might even say that the devil used his curious nature to tempt him into this distinctively unchristian interest. The argument can also be made that one must know their enemy to defeat them, as many missionaries may concur, and that was more towards Tolkien's objective. I could ramble on for many more pages, but I will simply say that I do not believe, based on Tolkien's letters and a deep feeling in my heart, that Tolkien was an occultist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Hope.
Yeah.
This is, again, one I don't feel particularly well educated on myself at this point. I do hope to dive into it at some point, because I, you know, I basically agree. I'm like, I've never seen anything that, I've never seen anything that makes me think that Tolkien, like, was a practicer of magic or something like that himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in fact, I just don't think that would make any sense at all, given his Catholic beliefs. One thing that, like, jumps into my mind, and I may be going a little bit off the reservation here, but I think sometimes we as Christians can forget, like, just how weird what we believe is. You know?
I think you're absolutely correct.
Like, to me, like, one thing I wish that Christians would be serious about recovering is the weirdness of what we believe, right? That we believe in a weird universe.
And to embrace it.
Right.
Like, not be
like
embarrassed.
To embrace it. Yeah.
Yeah. Not be embarrassed by it.
Yeah. In fact, is becoming Catholic, like, has given the, you know, has just dialed up the weirdness on our Christianity mm-hmm. immensely. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't even very weird as Catholics. Right. Like, we know a lot of very weird Catholics. Right. So you get, you know, get into Orthodox, who are very close, you know, very close to Catholics in a lot of ways, and, you know, also very weird. but like the weirdness of it is what I love, right? Mm. I mean, it is one of the things I love. It's not the only thing that I love. But I just, you know, like the fact that maybe he wasn't into this stuff, but he believed that it worked because Tolkien probably believed, as a Catholic, according to the catechism, should, that like evil powers exist, right? Evil spiritual forces exist, right?
Yeah, and it makes me wonder too if, I hope I don't misspeak here. Well, the thought in my brain is something to the effect of can, like, I feel like that's kind of a fine line mm-hmm. between magic and miracle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, as Catholics, we believe that when the, you know, priest raises the host, that it, you know, and says the words of consecration, it becomes the flesh of Jesus.
Right.
Like, we believe that, right? And that's clearly a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But can that fully be separated from some form of spiritual magic? You know, I mean, I don't, it's really, I feel like it's kind of a fine line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like you can, it's almost, it's kind of maybe using different words, but meaning the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, I think you're spot on there. Right. And again, like, I think there is a distinction like that you have to make between, the things that we've been kind of told to do and allowed to do as Christians, but then the things that we've also been forbidden to do.
Right.
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 And,
yes.
Yes. Or things where it's like, don't mess with that. Mm-hmm. Right. You're getting yourself mm-hmm. into some not so good stuff when you mess
right.
with that. Right.
Right. Yes. Yes.
What I'll do is I'll just recommend, because I feel like I don't want to get too far into this, because I really don't feel well equipped to address questions of the occult too much.
Nor do I.
Maybe in the future we'll get in, or just look at what Tolkien was charged with. But I will recommend one podcast that I listen to frequently is it's called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Mm-hmm. And it's if you love, if you love that kind of stuff, if you love, you know, just like looking at all kinds of like the different mysteries that happen, mm-hmm. right? You know, from aliens to like alien abductions to the paranormal to questions of like magic. And you also like kind of looking at it from, you know, a Christian moral perspective. I highly recommend that podcast.
Yeah.
He is a like solid thinker. Like you listen to the guy and the way he reasons through things, and you're like, this is like more, there should be more people like this guy running the show. Mm-hmm. Like he's so well thought and so fair minded mm-hmm. about everything.
Yes. Yeah.
He often lands in areas that you don't expect him to, but he's so mm-hmm. well reasoned in why he does. So I highly recommend looking up that show if you don't already listen to it, and you know, and following Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World
on so many different topics. So
he also does like podcasts on like Doctor Who and Star Trek and stuff like that, if you're into that kind of stuff. So I think he's done a few episodes on questions of like magic from a Christian perspective, and they're really, you know, they're really interesting. So anyway, do with that what you will.
Yeah, and no, this podcast is not at all. In
no
any way sponsored.
No, that was not a sponsor. That was purely spontaneous for me, just being like.
But he is awesome.
I just wanted to give him a plug because we do support. We're we're patrons for his podcast, and because it is very worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So,
thank you, Hope.
Thank you,
that
Hope.
Was
thank
really,
you very much.
Yeah, that was really good.
Our next is from Robert Snyder. So I'm using Robert's full name because he left it in the comments on the website, so it's public out there. So just a reminder, I try not to use people's full names if it's just one-on-one correspondence, and then if it's like a comment on the website, then I'll use their full name as they give it on the website. So pretty much going to use whatever name you give me, and kind of edge towards caution if I'm not sure if you want it out there publicly known. So this is from a couple of comments from Robert Snyder back in November, again after our Lord of the Rings and Religion episode. Let's see here, pull up Robert's notes. Here we go. All right, first, Robert said on November 24th, good episode and well said. It bothers me when in our current culture there are those that immediately want to cleanse any discussion of any religious connotation. In many cases, you can't do that and seriously study the work. You don't have to believe in the religious views of the author, but to totally set them aside means you will miss much of the meaning of the work. My father taught high school English many years ago. He said often in his later years that he didn't think he could have been an English teacher in today's climate. You don't have to preach or promote religion, but you have to at least understand it to fully appreciate the motivations behind the characters in many works. For example, how do you teach a novel like Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter without talking about religion? To whitewash it or call it religious, or to whitewash it of all religious connotation is to remove any meaning from the work. You need to understand their society in order to understand the book, and religion was an integral part of their society. There are many examples like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're a complete skeptic, a complete, you know, hardened atheist, you just have, like, you, religion is a part of human reality, right?
Yeah.
Is a part of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to study something pertaining to human nature, then you've got to take that into account, right? You can't just be like, la, 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 don't want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially when the author, him or herself, is, you know, has been very vocal about their own beliefs. Like, you can't separate the two.
Yeah.
And I think he makes a really important distinction that Robert does about how you don't have to believe it, but you can't just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to at least be willing to consider it and allow it to play the part it's meant to play if you want to fully appreciate and understand the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, Robert follows it up and says, one additional thought. When I was in college, one of the general requirements I took was an Eastern civilization class. A big part of the class was at least a survey of the basic beliefs of Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and others. There was no proselytizing or promotion of those beliefs, just a presentation of this is what they believe. The professor's point was, you cannot hope to understand the Eastern cultures if you don't at least to some degree understand the religions that were integral in shaping those cultures. I think this applies equally in to conversations like this, particularly when Tolkien even discussed in one of his letters how his Catholicism influenced his work. To simply ignore this will never allow you to fully understand the motivations behind the work.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, as a Christian, as a Catholic, I've always wanted to have the time to learn more about other, like, those other religions, Islam, mm-hmm. Hinduism, Buddhism. Mm-hmm. I feel like my knowledge of those religions, just what they believe and what they teach, is very surface level and wrong, you know, probably misinformed in various areas.
Right.
And I do wish I had more time to learn about them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, even before we became Catholic, I feel like the Catholicism I was, you know, taught or whatever was just full of misconceptions and mm-hmm. misunderstandings. And so I'm sure it's the same with lots of other, you know, religions. I'm done.
Right on. And I'm spent.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Yes,
thanks for the great comments. Appreciate you.
Yes, very, very much. Good.
All right. Our next comment is from David Bigwood.
David.
Yes, David.
Yes.
All right. So David said, just have to add a plus one to the comments above. I think he's referring to Robert and then another comment that we'll get to in just a moment. David says, I'm an atheist, and I'm not offended by discussing the place of Catholicism in Tolkien's writings, nor am I offended by discussing the Tao in the work of Le Guin, or the place of Lutheranism in the work of Bach. Hmm. Tolkien was a devout Catholic. That was an important part of who he was and is reflected in his writing. Just as he was English, fought in the First World War, loved languages, and lived in the first half of the 20th century. To overlook the place of religion in his life and writing would be to have an incomplete understanding. There are some books that use Tolkien to push their idea of Christianity. These are dishonest, cherry-picking Tolkien to support their belief system. But I think they do little harm, mostly being read by people who already agree with the book. They are published by and distributed in places that are likely to find the audience who agrees with them already. And there are those devotional books based on Tolkien, again, not offended, like I'm not offended by the quiz books. If some folks find them enjoyable, that's fine. As for the related topic that Tolkien and Lewis were involved in the occult, nope. Both were pretty traditional members of their churches. They did associate with people who have some connection to a cult. Charles Williams had some connection. He was an Inkling. He was a member of the Order of the Rosy Dawn. Owen Barfield was an anthroposophist. Not sure if that is a cult, but it is out of the mainstream of Western religion. I'm not even sure what anthroposophist is.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
I'm impressed that you could pronounce that.
Let's see what Wikipedia has
to say. I was
going to
say anthropologist, and I'm like, no, I don't think that's what he's saying.
That would just be a field of academic
I know,
study.
Right?
Anthroposophy, I think I'm saying that right, is a philosophy founded in the early 20th century by the esotericist Rudolf Steiner that postulates the existence of an objective, intellectually comprehensible spiritual world accessible to human experience. Ah, okay.
Hmm. Okay.
So basically, it almost sounds like it's like kind of an extreme form of, and again, I'm probably off the reservation here, but I think that's an extreme form of like Aristotelian thought, right? That there's like this, or even Platonic thought, that there's like this spirit, pure spiritual realm, that everything is a that everything in this world is like a representation of, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a parallel universe kind of thing?
But it's like a, it's not parallel. It's like a higher universe.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. All right.
So that would definitely be kind of outside of the realm of what most people, you know, mainstream Western religion, you know, so.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with everything you say, David, and, you know, thank you for your note. I think, it's good to hear somebody like David just say, nope, when it comes to like questioning of the occult, you know?
So that's been answered. Yeah.
Yeah.
What he said about, I'm sorry, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
You go ahead.
I was just going to say, but what he said about Tolkien, you know, I mean, especially when being as such a devout Catholic as he was, like that can't help but inform everything that you do in your life. I mean, it is your worldview. So that's what everything is going to come out of. Just like he mentioned, you know, his fighting in the First World War and his love of languages. I mean, it's all part of who you are.
Yeah.
And religion, I feel like maybe even more so, just because it is so basically, you know, it's just kind of innate to us as human beings. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool. Okay. Thanks, David.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have a few notes from Marilyn the librarian.
Marilyn.
All right. So her first one was November 28th. Subject Tolkien and religion. She says, "Hello, Carswells. Very interesting topic this week, one with many resonances for me. I think it's always important to be clear, and I'm thinking of all of us here, that my interpretation isn't necessarily what is so. I do my best to rely on Tolkien's own statements, even as I recognize that he also changed his mind about many things over the course of his lifetime. The nature of works, for instance, or the story of Galadriel. It's also important to remember that sharing Tolkien's religion, or even his denomination, as you both do, is not the same thing as sharing his religious views. I have yet to encounter a religion which is understood monolithically by its followers, and I've seen a wide variety of interpretations and understandings of Catholicism throughout history and into the present day. There will, of course, be much overlap between Tolkien's Catholicism and today's and all its variety, but there will also be differences. Belief, experience, and fact are all viable aspects of religion. I know a Jew witch, pagan Jew, who never saw Christianity in C.S. Lewis, and a pagan who never saw Christianity in Tolkien. That doesn't mean their readings were wrong, and they got a great deal of enjoyment from the stories regardless. I think that Middle-earth is the most significant myth, in the Tolkienian sense, of the 20th and 21st centuries. Myth serves as a mirror of culture of the author and of its readers. If readers don't see themselves to some degree in the myth, they may reinterpret the myth, or walk away, or smash at the mirror. It's perfectly possible to enjoy religious content in a story without actually believing it, as I think you said. It's just a different experience. The danger comes in evaluating that different experience as right, wrong, or even richer, poorer. At least that's my experience." And she goes on to say, "And I would be delighted to hear an episode of the podcast in which Greta reads some of the Father Christmas letters." You go, Greta. Well, maybe next year. I think we missed the boat on that one.
Christmas is another 7 days long.
Well, that's true.
You know, if we're talking about the octave.
Yeah.
That Catholics celebrate.
Well, good.
Maybe around New Year's. Could I just read them? If I just could just read them, that would be easy enough.
I don't know if you can do that, like, because, I mean, it's, you're reading, you're basically creating an audio book of, you know, a published work, something.
Well,
we
maybe
don't
I could
the
read them
for.
To one of our children and have them respond to it.
Okay.
We'll see. Well, now I feel bad that I didn't do it. I feel like I should do something.
Well, there's always next year, you know.
True.
I'm just saying, I'm going to end up having to do all the production work on this thing.
That is actually a fact. Yes.
Yeah. So,
But thank you, I'm glad that Marilyn knows that she likes, I'm glad to know that Marilyn likes my idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, but there's more to her letter. So let's continue on.
Okay.
"As for the broader topic of paganism and Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, there are, of course, pagan elements in them both because there are pagan elements in Christianity. A seasonal example would include evergreen wreaths like Advent wreaths and Christmas trees, both of which were shunned by Puritans because they reflected pre-Christian practices. The story of a dying and rising deity goes back to the Sumerians and Inanna to the Corn King, Persephone, and Baldur the Beautiful, who first caught C.S. Lewis's attention. Lewis eventually referred to these stories as God sending humans good dreams to prepare them for a certain Jewish carpenter. Perhaps a review of the story in Carpenter's biography of Tolkien concerning Tolkien, Lewis, and Dyson and their conversation about myths and faith as they followed Addison Walk along the River Cherwell is in order. That long late night talk is the reason why Tolkien wrote his amazing poem, Mythopoeia. paganism is in the DNA of Christianity, but there is no way, but that's in no way the same thing as Tolkien and Lewis were occultists. Charles Williams sometimes teetered on the edge of that line, but they never did. Given that I taught on courses on these topics, I'd be happy to talk further with you about any of them, and apologies for repeating anything which you already know. No, thank you so much,
yeah,
Marilyn. I think,
there's
a whole lot in here, and so I'm just going to pick a couple of quick things to say. I think, so we did actually do, we talked quite a bit on our episode, our crossover episode of with Pints with Jack, about the Tolkien, Lewis, and Dyson conversation and about Mythopoeia. Mm-hmm. So, not sure if people want to go back and listen to our conversation with David Bates of Pints with Jack. We do talk about that over there, although we may not touch on that entirely. But I would just say, Tolkien had very complex views, because I think he was very well educated about the history of so many of these things, and I have no problem with somebody, you know, as a Christian, I have no problem with somebody saying that paganism is in the DNA of Christianity any more than I have somebody saying that Judaism is in the DNA of Christianity.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
both things are true, mm-hmm, because Christianity, mm-hmm, grew up in both societies, right?
Right.
With both of those things coming before it.
Yes.
So, and yep, its particular brand of paganism in both of those things. But Marilyn's got a couple more. Let's see. She's got a couple more things to say here. Let me look at a couple of her other notes. So she also wrote on December 7th. And she says, P.S. On your very timely point on today's podcast, Tolkien's early adult life post-World War I, it is not wise to assume, as I did with my reference to Charles Williams. He was one of the Inklings. He moved to Oxford during World War II to accompany his department in the Oxford University Press, which had relocated there from London to escape the bombing. Lewis was very taken with him and liked his writing. This showed up in the third volume of Lewis's space trilogy, which is rather different from the first two. Williams' own books could be described as spiritual thrillers, and they contain many occult images and themes. I'm not very familiar. I know who Charles Williams was. I'm not very familiar with his work. But I will say that one thing we didn't touch on when we did the Lord of the Rings and Paganism episode was how Tolkien and Lewis... Lewis's space trilogy. I don't know if you've read Lewis's space trilogy, but I remember reading, mm-hmm, Lewis's space trilogy as, probably 12 or 13 years old, and just being like struck by like his, like I'd never heard any like, you know, Christian writer or thinker express this possibility that like the gods were possibly real, right? Like the pagan gods, mm-hmm, were like possibly real, mm-hmm, and like kind of create this like kind of explanation that works within traditional Christianity for like what they actually are, right? And that there's like this idea that they are like rulers of particular localities, right? That they're like the spiritual rulers of particular localities. And so like in Out of the Silent Planet, which is the first book in that trilogy, you have the character who I think is Ransom, which I think is based on Tolkien. I think it's supposed to be like, you know, Lewis's characterization of Tolkien within his own works.
Huh.
Goes and meets and the Oyarsa. He basically goes to Mars and like meets this figure called the Oyarsa, who's like the angelic ruler of Mars, right? And so Tolkien and Lewis were not like, they did not have these minds that were like boxed in by, you know, by their religious, for them, like their religious, mm-hmm, views were like the view, like, mm-hmm, the overriding view of reality. And it was maybe, mm-hmm, like kind of the prism through which they kind of, you know, would try to understand. But I think they were pretty ready to kind of expand the boundaries of these things too,
yeah,
if they,
yeah,
found evidence or just interesting things that didn't seem, you know, to fit in. So.
And just because you're exploring something doesn't mean that that's the belief system that you ascribe to.
I
think it's myopic not to recognize and even explore that there are other, you know, there are other options out there.
Well, and this gets back to my comment at the beginning about speculative theology, right? I think both Tolkien and Lewis were engaged in something like speculative theology through their fictional works, right? And even in, even sometimes in their nonfiction, you know, works of nonfiction, right. Mm-hmm. That they were talking about, well, you know, we can just kind of, we could just kind of paint within the established lines of what we've been told is allowable and not allowable, to discuss, or we can, you know, we can look at some of these bigger questions. And honestly, when I look back at the history of Christianity, which is something I do know a little bit of something about, like I can actually see that, you know, Christian thinkers, very traditional Christian thinkers, saints, you know, spent time thinking about these things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
because it helps to inform your own belief system, I think.
Well, it, not to inform your own belief system, but also like it is a real question. Like, did human beings just made these things up?
Right.
Just to make these things up. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you explain miracles? How do you explain, you know, magic of the past? Yes, there, you know, there are obviously things that were faked, but that doesn't explain everything, right?
No.
That doesn't explain everything.
Mm-mm.
And you do have all these remarkable, you know, remarkable stories. Where do all these things come from? So you can choose the path of rationalism and trying to explain it all in a very materialistic way. Or you can find a path that you know, that believes in, you know, that there is some truth to these things, right? Mm-hmm. We may not completely have all of it. We don't completely have all of it, but
I don't think we ever will.
And it's also not to deny, you know, believing that Christianity is true, to say that there are truths in these other things, as Lewis himself would have said.
Yes. So agreed.
We're kind of thinking extemporaneously, you're very off the cuff right here with a lot of these things. So I'll probably end up saying things that I end up regretting or being like, well, I wish I would have said that better. But
another reason you don't go back and listen.
Yeah. Well, I'll hear about it from you guys if I need to. So,
yes.
And then one more note from Maryland here. Maryland. Who might be in Maryland? I don't know. I don't even know. Let me find this. Okay. Let's see. I think this is the right one. Yeah. Okay. From just a few days ago, December 22nd, she says, "Hello, Carswells. May I say what a great episode it was on Tolkien and paganism? I thought you did a terrific job of being clear about your own beliefs, even as you were respectful of others. If you want to dig more deeply into the discussion, The Ring and the Cross has two excellent essays on both perspectives. Dr. Ronald Hutton is an excellent scholar of the pagan history of England and has many interesting points to make." All right. Well, thank you, Marilyn. Thank you, as always, for your very thoughtful, well-informed correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our next note is from Tad D. from December 1st. Tad says, "Dear the Tolkien Road, as a lifelong Tolkien fan, I'm loving your podcast. I discovered it only less than a week ago, and I'm already deeply impressed. One of the first episodes I listened to was Lord of the Rings and Religion, and I think you did an amazing job at discussing that aspect of Tolkien's writing. As a Christian, one of my favorite parts of his work are the religious similarities to Christianity and the Bible, which might be why I enjoyed the Silmarillion so much. Thank you for what you do."
Awesome. That's quite an episode to jump in on.
I know. Well,
well, that's awesome. I'm glad you found us, Ted.
I figured some people might, because it'd just be like Lord of the Rings. Oh, you see that? You like run across it and you're like, oh, I want to hear what this one has to say.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Tad.
Thanks, Tad.
Yeah.
Great to hear from you. I'm glad you're listening.
Yes.
Our next comment is from Joey S. Joey, this was again from a couple of days ago. He said, "Hey guys, I really enjoyed this discussion about religion. It's such a huge part of my life, and I can see it in Tolkien's works as well. What we are passionate about has a way of interweaving itself into our everyday tasks. For me, it's the passion of music. The inspirations all draw from my faith, whether it stems from creation, the beautiful landscapes, the sound of rain, or simply a euphoric sound bouncing in my head. I have to capture it, even if it's just a glimpse of the possible outcome. It's then a part of who you are, and out of that pours the art, the final product that affects others on a deep level. I compare it to how people feel when emotions come about when listening to music. When passion is put into something, you can't help but notice and appreciate it for its sincerity. I feel it was very similar for Tolkien and his works. I just think about when he was grading papers and he had to write down very quickly, 'In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit.' Genius, spontaneous, and inspired. Learning more about him and the way his religion was reflected through his books is exciting. It gives you a better understanding of who this man was as a whole, and it also helps you appreciate his works more when you read them. I'm glad to hear the discussion has helped others understand and grasp a better picture of Tolkien. I know it did for me. I'm excited for the new year and more Tolkien Road. Can't wait to see what's on the horizon. God bless and Merry Christmas to all roadsters.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much, Joey.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for a great comment. Mm-hmm. And I think your view of creativity is very Tolkienian.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tolkien would have liked it, you know, the way you approach such things.
So, yeah. Just being inspired. It's really inseparable, right, from your daily life and all the things that you experience day to day. I mean, like he said, just even the simplest things, like the sound of rain or, you know, beautiful landscapes. I mean, you can't, when that's creative spirit is in you, it's in you. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can't separate. I feel like you almost can't really even choose what inspires you.
Absolutely. Well, I know that feeling as a fellow creative person. I just, you know, when it's something grabs a hold of you, you can't let you kind of just have to get it out.
You have to get it out.
You know, it hurts. Yep. It hurts to keep it in.
And, you know, it goes with cooking too, because that's my creative spirit.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I like, I'm just feeling like I want to eat something particular, like I have to make it.
I would honestly be surprised if like we didn't really learn that every human being has something like that for
something,
them.
Yeah. And because there's so many different forms of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just somebody who likes to whittle. Right.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or like our kid that has these baseball games in his head, like he has to come out here and play them out.
Right.
You know, I mean, these imaginary players and plays and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, the verisimilitude of these things, these baseball games that he plays by himself. They are very real in his mind.
It's just.
Yeah. You can tell
amazing.
By watching him.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And wonderful.
It
yeah.
is. It's awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Joey.
Yes. Thank you, Joey.
Our next couple of notes are from Jennifer, a longtime correspondent, longtime listener, Jennifer. Her first one was from November 24th. She says, "The more I learn about Catholicism, the more I see in Tolkien's works. I used to think that Tom Shippey was right about what he said about Frodo, but now I agree with Joseph Pierce. Also, the more I learn about the Catholic faith and about Tolkien's faith, the more I am drawn towards Catholicism."
Hmm.
So, very cool. Yeah, I'm not sure what the difference is between Tom Shippey and Joseph Pierce on
Frodo. Yeah, I was going to ask you. You don't know.
You don't I'm know. Not sure what that's a reference to, but maybe Jennifer can write to us again and let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, let's see. We got another note from Jennifer. Let's see here. All right. This is from this is in response to the Lord of the Rings and Paganism episode. "I have observed that this criticism against Tolkien is new. The early critics never even mentioned what they thought concerning religion in the Lord of the Rings, if they even thought about it. As far as I know, this kind of criticism only started with the advent of occult witchcraft literature. Many people do not know how to distinguish between genres, so we must do what we can to show others the difference and teach them how to make distinctions. I have not read The Golden Compass, but I have learned enough about it to know that I have no intentions of reading or watching that kind of thing. I have learned how to make these distinctions myself from personal experience. I used to watch reruns of the old soap opera Dark Shadows until I grew wiser. My mother recently told me that she stopped watching it when it started getting into the crazy occult stuff. Now I know why I used to have disturbing horror film dreams." So, I'm not familiar with what soap opera Dark Shadows is.
Are you? I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, I think, you know, I think what I take away from Jennifer's note here is just like, you know, let's all strive to be a little more educated about, you know, in the things we say before we make criticism. If we look at something, we're like, that's not something I really want to spend my time watching. I've certainly done that before. I probably should be a huge Game of Thrones fan, Yes.
That's what you said.
Game of Thrones. Yeah. Game of Thrones fan. But I watched an episode and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. It was like, there was so much violence. I mean, not just like violence in the sense of like battle scenes and that kind of thing, but like just like gore violence, like just like very like intense violence of where you see like what the violence probably actually really looks like in real life. And I was kind of like, I don't want to watch this. And there's just something seemed very cruel about a lot of it, and I didn't get a picture of there being any characters that I particularly thought were like I could root for.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should stop before you
before I offend all the
before
Games
you get
of
some hate email.
I'm not trying to cast hate. I'm just trying to say that look, I think I'm trying to agree with Jennifer that there may be things that you're not, you know, you're not particularly drawn to.
Right, and it's fine. Like yeah. It's fine, right?
But I also I'm also going to say this. I think it's perfectly valid. I am a fan of robust like critical discussion of people being of people even butting heads on something that they disagree with.
I'm not. That's why we're a good team.
I'm not saying that I want people to like get angry and violent with one another. I'm just saying like I'm a fan of people being like I love Game of Thrones, and the other person being like I watched Game of Thrones once and I could not stand it, and here's all the things I think are wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that'd be fun, and if you don't want to participate in that, then don't participate in it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To each his own, really. Yeah. Yeah, just each his own. Right?
And you know what I think? But you know what I think ends up happening a lot of times in those kinds of conversations?
What?
I think a lot of times people end up finding that they agree on a whole lot more than they disagree on.
Then I think you're right.
And actually people, because there's an exhausting factor about people kind of expending a little bit of that pent up emotion upon one another, but on something they can agree on. And they arrive at a place where they're like, now they can't arrive at a place where they're just both completely stubborn and they don't want to, you know, they refuse to see eye to eye on anything. And that's a little bit absurd and ridiculous. But sometimes with those controversies, you can also arrive at a place where you're like, I don't agree with you, but I kind of understand. Or actually, I think I'll give that a second look now that
right.
you describe it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think a lot of good can come out of those types of conversations.
Yeah.
I just tend to shy away from confrontation. And
well, it takes energy. You got to be ready. You got to have the emotional energy ready to go into
yeah.
it. And I have to like, be very deliberate about how I engage in those things too. Absolutely.
Yeah, you do, because it's so easy to give in to those emotional, you know, especially topics that people feel strongly about, and that they hold very dear to their hearts. That's, you know, it's hard to kind of separate the emotion from the reason or the logic sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was going to say something else, but that's probably why I don't spend much time on Twitter. Yeah. So anyway,
that's why I'm not on social media at all.
Yeah, I'm increasingly on social media less. All right. So although I am, you know, guys, I'm kind of thinking about doing the Instagram thing just because like that seems like a friendlier version of social media.
As long as you can take pretty pictures.
Not so good at that, but maybe you can take pretty pictures and I can post them.
I cannot take pretty pictures.
Well, maybe we'll just do it anyway with our non-pretty pictures. People can make, you can go on there and make fun of our unpretty pictures. Oh, all right.
That might be fun.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Jennifer. Thanks
yes,
for your correspondence.
Thank you.
We always appreciate hearing from you.
Mm-hmm.
A few more comments here. Andrew T. from
this
December
23rd. This is like 23rd. A marathon, dude.
It is. There's a lot, you know.
That's great.
So Andrew wrote, and let me see here. Regarding Tolkien and paganism, I want to say that the Valar and Middle-earth sound very similar to how things are in Lewis's Space Trilogy. Which I was mentioning before.
Oh, yes, you did mention that.
Where you have archangels that rule over each planet, and they are actually named after the corresponding Roman gods. For instance, the archangel of the planet Venus is Venus, and Mars is Mars, but they are all subordinate in power and authority to God. And then he says, I'm sure the folks at Pints with Jack could give more info, and another crossover episode discussing this topic would be very entertaining and interesting. Lastly, if you haven't, which I would be surprised if you haven't, Lewis's Space Trilogy is a must-read. You know, I've read the first two, and I loved them. I especially loved Perelandra. Perelandra, like, it's been years since I've read it, but I remember just being completely engrossed in it. And I remember with That Hideous Strength, I got into it, but that's a tougher read. It's a little harder to get into That Hideous Strength. But have you read any of them?
The Space Trilogy?
Yeah. You haven't read any of them?
No.
I thought you had at some point.
No. Just, I don't know. It's not really my thing.
But it's not science fiction like you think of science fiction.
Really?
Yeah.
And what is it like?
It's like science fiction if Lewis wrote it.
It doesn't help.
Yes, it does, because it's C.S. Lewis.
It's hard for me to separate.
It's not Star Wars or Star Trek. It's really not like either of those things at all.
Okay. All right. So is it kind of more in the vein of like Till We Have Faces?
I mean, yes, because it's written by C.S. Lewis.
Okay.
But I think you at least need to give Out of the Silent Planet a try.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will.
So it's been a long time since I read them too. So, but hey, well, yeah, shout out to David Bates if he's listening right now. Mm-hmm. Hit us up if you want to do a crossover episode on Tolkien, Lewis, and paganism. That might be an interesting one to do and talk about their two views and how they interacted with each other as Christians who were both also very into pagan mythology. So
yeah,
and how they incorporated cool. into their
be,
works.
That would be very cool. I mean, Till We Have Faces. I mean, that's a very pagan type work.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. Yeah. And I think they just, Pints with Jack just did that.
They did. Right? Yes, yeah. They did. That's right.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your
thank
comment.
You.
Let's see. We have one from Mitch from December 23rd. Actually, that's not the one. Let's see. There was a couple Mitch left. Where is it? Here we go. He left this in response to Is Middle Earth Pagan, the last episode. Seems as though it would be a sphere of influence and thought for Tolkien. Consider his love of Beowulf, and that story was found in the Nahual Codex alongside stories of St. Christopher, letters of Alexander to Aristotle, and other apocryphal writings and literature. Even earth-based religions and studies point us in a decent direction to draw near or seek the source in a natural way, like Romans talks about. Studying Lord of the Rings can serve as a beak wetter to better understand the writing styles of the Bible. If you can understand the Lord of the Rings and the appendix, then you should give the Bible a shot or a second read through. If 66 books by 40 different authors is a bit much, then drop down and read the Gospel after reading Lord of the Rings. Tolkien's Hobbit book is a white, I should say, Tolkien would say, if 73 books.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true.
Little Catholicism versus Protestantism joke there. All right, Tolkien's Hobbit book is a white belt for readers and serves nicely as a primer for the deeper waters of the Lord of the Rings. Most folks approach the Bible like most people try a kid's karate class and don't come back because they think they got the premise or can't envision themselves losing in a street fight and arrogantly dismiss the techniques and benefits of practice and learning. If you can wrap your head around the Lord of the Rings or even the Hobbit, reconsider revisiting the Gospel on behalf of Tolkien's work on translating the Bible. If you think he's prompting a pagan agenda, then it would be to your benefit to study other religions and that your study would be fulfilled in you studying Christ and learning his way is the one that rings true.
Hmm.
So,
yeah.
Well, thank you for a thoughtful note there, Mitch. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, you kind of went the same direction as us, right? You know, that there's, I think it's just, you know, it can be good for us, you know, to expand our minds beyond the horizons that we're used to. It doesn't mean that we have to adopt everything about what we read or what we like, but we might find something that we find truly fascinating that might expand our horizons and could be very, you know, very helpful to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Well said.
I kind of want to take a karate class.
I know.
So,
especially after all the Cobra Kai we've been watching.
And last, but certainly not least, is from Sergeant Slim Jim, left on Christmas.
Sergeant Slim Jim.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Slim Jim says, as a fellow Catholic and Tolkien enjoyer, I liked episode 222 about paganism and Middle Earth. Something struck me as you were discussing the development of worship in Middle Earth, especially when you mentioned Sauron introducing the cult of Melkor into Numenor. It reminded me of how the Israelites in the Book of Judges had a more direct rule from God, but insisted on having a king in the same manner as their pagan neighbors. I don't know anything about Tolkien's correspondence at all, but it seems at least possible he was referencing Israel's departure from the rule of Judges when he described how Numenor departed from pure worship and into what was essentially devil worship. I offer this as a compliment to your excellent podcast and not as a criticism.
Hmm.
Keep up the good work. I look forward to future episodes.
Awesome. Thanks, Sergeant Slim Jim.
Thank you, Sergeant
yes.
Slim Jim.
Yes.
Thank you for, really thank you for sharing your delightful name with us as well.
Totally.
We love your beef sticks.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
We are, our children actually really love them too.
They love to snap into them. Snap into a Slim Jim, you know.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I'm sorry, beef shouldn't crunchy.
new tagline for the podcast. Beef shouldn't be crunchy.
It shouldn't. What I was going to say. No, I think that's a really, really interesting observation. That comparison. I think he might be onto something there. About the similarities between the judges wanting a king and the and Melkor introducing Sauron and Melkor. And okay, you know what I'm trying to say. You all right heard on. What John just read. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very interesting observation, and I think there very well could be something there.
Indeed.
Okay.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff. You know, so I think we're reaching the point in the podcast where we've been going through a lot of good correspondence, and
we're a little saturated.
Yeah, we're a little spent. I think a little spent because you all had such great thoughts to say, and
for sure,
you know,
lots of good stuff.
We appreciate everything everybody wanted to say, and so now comes the part where we're disappointed because we didn't, you know, do a good job of, you know, speaking of giving great responses to every single one. Maybe
we tried to fit in too much. Maybe.
Yeah.
But we appreciate all of it.
Absolutely.
Very, very much. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up for this episode. You know, again, correspondence, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, through the website, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and, you know, maybe Instagram in the not too distant future. We'll see. But I just want to say thank you for another amazing year. Since this is the last episode of 2020, I just want to say a few things to close out what has been kind of a Mordor-ish year for many, if not all of us, right? 2020, I think we are happy to get it in our rearview mirror for so many reasons.
Yeah.
We've been doing this podcast for more than 5 years now, and we're honored by everyone who continues to listen. Podcasting has its ups and downs. Some weeks the episodes feel effortless, while other weeks life brings the resistance, as Stephen Pressfield calls it, in full force. We try to persevere, but the war of art is a war of attrition. I've also had an epiphany that I think I'm wired somewhat like Tolkien himself, something of a pessimist when it comes to human nature and the ways of the world, but unfailingly hopeful about eternity. There are times that I feel like it would be wise to let the podcast go, but in the end, I just can't. I don't think it's because it's my precious, but because it feels like a part of my fate, my calling. I don't mean that to sound conceited or self-important. I'm simply stating with you all the truth about why this show keeps going. There are few people who mean as much to me as Tolkien does. I dream of one day being able to spend as much time writing and podcasting and speaking about his outlook, philosophy, and works as I spend on my day job. Right now, I have to settle for carving out the moments I can, and like him, I am a procrastinator, and this podcast is, I guess, my niggle's leaf. I end far more days in the frustration of what I didn't accomplish as opposed to those certain days I feel content. As I've said before, my love of Tolkien is not really about the lore or the languages. I do love that stuff, and my love for it has only grown. But ultimately, my love for Tolkien has to do with what he bore witness to from the gray havens of his life. The secret part of his heart, the joy beyond the walls of the world that he detected, the unmistakable sense in his writing that not only will all be well, but in the end, everything sad will indeed come untrue, and the things we have struggled to bring to existence here will be given the fulfillment beyond anything we can possibly imagine. This world is a veil of tears with attendant joys, to be sure, but our lives in this world are destined for a final darkness, shrouded in mystery. I believe in a hope beyond that darkness, as Tolkien did too, and that hope is the very person we celebrate this Christmas season. All this is to say, I'm going to keep doing this podcast for the foreseeable future, or at least for as long as the call seems to me like a divine thing. I've discovered that the call of being a maker, of being a sub-creator, is the call to keep going. Or to keep giving. In the end, nothing ever finally satisfies, nothing feels good enough, except the moment of making, of being in front of the microphone and in the groove. The reality never quite matches the vision, but it feels good for a short while just to say what I want to say. So in summary, thank you all for listening, sticking with us, corresponding with us, and supporting us financially. There are few things as satisfying as knowing that so many of you are out there listening to us, laughing with us, and keeping it real Tolkien style. We hope that everyone has a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. So.
Yes. What you said.
All right.
All of it. Fantastic.
Boom.
Yep.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for listening. Yes, and a shout out to our patrons, especially the following. Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Lise U.
Andrew T.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Eric B.
Matt L.
Johanna T.
Ms. Anonymous.
Sam N.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.